Welcome back to the Rewind That Tape podcast. I'm Jay Prubbs.
And I'm Dr. Cash.
And today we're here with the weekend wrap-up. And we have to start with the team that had, I think, the most surprising performance out of all. The Dallas Cowboys losing 16-28 to the Arizona Cardinals. And, I mean, the Cardinals were considered to be one of the worst teams in the league. And Dallas, right, after coming off of two dominant wins. I mean, Cash, is this kind of a blip, or is there something more to be worried about for the Cowboys?
I think there's something more to be worried about, and I think at least from the offensive perspective, because the first two games, I mean, they weren't great. It was more of the defense just kind of bailing them out, giving them a lot of opportunities. I mean, Dak made terrible throws constantly. And that last drive kind of summed it up, that last play where he threw the pick in the red. It's a terrible read. I mean, there's three defenders there. Receiver wasn't even close to where he was throwing it. I mean, I guess I saw the vision, but I mean, the way that ball is caught is if there's no defenders there, and that's just not how football works. So it's a terrible read by him, and this offense has to get it together.
I agree with you. I think Dallas defense has been dominant, and – I mean, this was the game that I think maybe the offense gets a reset, that the defense is as dominant as ever, but it was the exact opposite of that. I mean, the Cardinals just had open space everywhere. I mean, Rondale Moore was carving them up, Marquise Brown. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was crazy. But like you said, the Cowboys' offense only scoring 16 points. I mean, they had a few drives into the red zone where they long drives, like 13 play, 67-yard drives where they settled for a field goal, or 8 plays, 80 yards where they turned it over on downs. And these are plays that you can't punch it in the red zone. And that, I feel like that ultimately is what cost them the game, the inability to punch it in to get that 7 points, having to settle for 3 points or turning over on down.
I think for me, there is settling for 3 points, taking the points was the best decision. I mean, because like they didn't get it, that gave momentum to Arizona, and Arizona was able to drive down the field and score points. So I think from a coaching perspective, I know McCarthy likes to be aggressive, especially when we get into the red zone. But it's like you just got to take the points, even if, you know, you want that touchdown against a bad team. Even if the score is going to be low and you barely beat them, that's better than it resulting in a loss. So I think getting the points and having that a little bit more comfort would have been better for this offense.
Yeah, for sure. But I think just the inability to punch it in, I feel like with the weapons that they have on the field, you should be able to get a touchdown. But I mean, I guess I can see what you're saying as well. Getting points on the board is important. But at the end of the day, Dallas just, they need to score more. They need to have better offensive production. Dak can't, I mean, he hit a QBR of 41, which is, I mean, Josh Dobbs had an 84 QBR. He basically doubled that. And so I think for Dak, it's, I mean, sure, he had 250 yards. He had one touchdown, one interception, but he just needs to be more efficient. And he just needs to play better. I feel like he gets a bunch of volume, but they can't convert that into touchdowns. They can't convert that into points. And if their defense isn't on lock, then they can't convert that into wins.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's something that I noticed in this game. This defense has to be perfect in order for the offense to have any chance at winning. I mean, we looked at those first two games where Dallas was, their defense was scoring touchdowns, they're getting interceptions, just making plays all over the field, and that set the offense up in great position. So when I look at it, when I saw this game, when the defense was looking vulnerable at times, they gave up, 28 points, the offense was frozen. When they have to start the ball back at their own 25, it's a struggle for them to score touchdowns. And that's what I noticed. I mean, this offense has to be less dependable.
Yeah, and I think especially now that the defense, you don't have Trevon Diggs, you're out without your star cornerback, your lockdown cornerback. So it kind of falls on the offense to create. And man, I don't know. I feel like if they don't get their mojo back, I feel like this could be one of Dak's last. This could possibly be his last season in Dallas.
I don't know if I'd go as far to that extent, just because I feel like that bond between Jerry and Dak and Mike McCarthy is just too strong. Like, Dak's just kind of been that guy, been the leader, been there for Dallas. I want to move on from him personally, but at the same time, you're paying him $40 million a year, and there's just really not much of a market for him, especially. Mm-hmm. I mean, I say that just because of the contract. He's an all right quarterback. But that contract, no team's going to want to take on, especially when there's loads of QB talent coming in this upcoming draft.
Yeah, I agree with you on that point. But, I mean, I could see if it goes downhill.
I guess him getting benched, maybe. I want to see Trey Lance get a chance. That's what I really want to see.
Uh-huh. You already know, man.
That's just not going to happen until next season.
I mean, if you're – midway in the season and you lose to the 49ers, you lose to the Chargers, you lose to the Patriots, and then you lose to the Eagles. I mean, I could see Dak Prescott. If New York Jets have a convincing offer, I could see Dak Prescott being moved.
That's the thing. Like, if you look at it right now, I'm going to try to name three teams that will honestly – be in the market for Dak. I mean, I'd say the top three that would come into my mind are, I'd say Tennessee, maybe.
I mean, you just need one.
Maybe Tennessee. But that's the thing. Like, who's going to take on that contract?
I feel like the New York Jets, if they see this, if they're like, Aaron Rodgers, this was our season with him. He is old now. He's not going to be performing. We can get Dak Prescott in this team. If we give up a few picks, if we can keep Wilson, keep Sauce, then I could see them doing that.
Because I think like, there's potential to that, definitely. But like, I don't know if they move on from Rodgers like that. He's just been already, even without passing for a yard yet, he's changed so much of that culture. So I think they stick out 1 year just to experiment with him. But yeah, I don't know, man. This Dak experiment after those first 2 years has not been pretty.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's if nothing changes, something has to, like, Jerry has to do something because Dallas is not going to be happy with this, and I mean Jerry's not going to be happy with this if they keep putting in performances like this. But moving on to top performances, I guess. I mean, in that same division, Philadelphia Eagles. Looking as good as ever. I mean, 3-0, beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 25-11 last night, and I mean, they look amazing. And Jalen Hurts did not even play that well. He had 277 yards. He had 2 interceptions. But man, that defense is good. Man, it's good.
Yeah, it was just crazy to see. You know, I've watched the Buccaneers these first 2 weeks, and they got up a slow start in Minnesota, but after that, they looked good the rest of that game, and they looked good for the majority of that game against Chicago. Then comes this Monday night game. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say the Eagles have looked particularly well defensively. They've looked vulnerable in that secondary. It's been banged up. But, I mean, that D-line completely obliterated Tampa Bay's offensive line.
Yep.
Baker was scrambling for his life, got sacked multiple times, threw a pick. Yep. But I think today's where we saw the beauty of this Eagles team. I mean, even though Jalen Hurts turned the ball over twice, didn't play his best, that defense came to play, and they still won pretty comfortably.
Yeah, and it's like you said, the defense came to play. And this they limited Tampa to 11 points. The rushing game of the Bucs was basically non-existent. Rashad White had 38 yards. He was averaging 2.7 yards per carry. And, I mean, it seemed like the only offense they could get was through the air. Mike Evans, some crazy miraculous catches. And that was only on that one drive where they scored a touchdown. But I think, I think this Eagles defense, we were saying it last year too, but now that you add Jalen Carter, it's just, it looks so dangerous. It just looks like whoever is on the other side of the ball is just going to get absolutely obliterated. And then the fact that you have Jalen Hurts and this offense who, I mean, you have A.J. Brown go for 131 yards, DeAndre Swift go for 130 yards. And I mean, it, the running game is looking so much better than it did last year. D. Swift is
just, I mean, oh yeah, Swift's underrated, so underrated.
He adds something different to this lineup. The quickness that he has, the ability to catch outside of the backfield, just is not. Miles Sanders didn't bring that last year. It's something they haven't had, and it's just, oh, I don't know. The offense is already opened up as it is, but just adding Swift in there just adds another chess piece to the puzzle.
Yeah, I mean, if Swift can stay healthy, that can turn into a really elite weapon. I think when I saw that the Eagles ended up acquiring him, I mean, he was pretty good in Detroit. It was just injury riddled, and they thought they had a future star, Jahmyr Gibbs. So they let him go. But Swift was a dog at Georgia. He was really good. He had some pretty promising years in Detroit, and now he's in Philly, where the load's not going to be even close to, you know, what it was on him in Detroit before they got Goff and Amon-Ra. It's going to be a lighter load, you know, on those second. They have Kenneth Gainwell as well. So this is just another masterclass signing by Howie Roseman.
Yep. That's what it just seems like. Masterclass after masterclass.
Yeah.
In the draft, in the trades, in free agency, everything. But talking about a team that we all thought would be a masterclass this season, the Cincinnati Bengals, struggling to a 19-16 win over the Los Angeles Rams, getting their first win of the season, but not in kind of Bengals fashion as we'd expect. Joe Burrow had 190 yards, no touchdown, no interception. It just, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with the Bengals team. Like, they should be amazing, right? But they're just not.
I seriously think that Burrow's calf is nowhere near where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. I think AJ McCarron or whoever their backup was should have started tonight, because you don't want to risk him further injuring that, and it's not worth it to keep playing him when you're not going to get the results you want offensively. So I feel like they got the win. Jamar had a really, really big game, but Burrow just didn't look good. He's unable to extend plays. He's just throwing the ball out of bounds after a few seconds if receivers aren't open. And that and you could tell tonight it really affected the gameplay.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I mean, it just – he was not – that just not the Joe Burrow we're used to seeing. And you could easily – correlate that to his injury, the fact that he can't move, he can't extend play, doesn't have the same confidence that he had, and I mean, Jamar Chase, the fact that he finally had a breakout game, but like, it just does not look good. They need to get Burrow healthy, because he is really the only way that they're gonna go back, repeat AFC championship type success.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, in order to get back to that success, their playmakers are going to need to make plays. And with that, after they cut Lyle Collins, it was really surprising to me, because getting Joe Burrow, that protection was one of their main focuses after that injury he suffered against Washington. I don't know what it was, if it was something within his relationship with the coaching staff, or if he just wasn't healthy, but you know, that cut was a surprise to me. But I think that O-line was able to kind of, after a rough start against Aaron Donald, they were able to turn it around and give Burrow a little bit better protection there in the second half, especially Orlando Brown. He looked great.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the key addition to that team. But, yeah, I don't know. Like you said, he has to get healthy. But moving on to the Rams – man, I don't know what to think about this team. I think Matthew Stafford had a not that good of a game, 2 interceptions. And it looks like that first week sizzle that they kind of had after that Seahawks game is kind of starting to wear off now. They lost to the 49ers, now they lose to the Bengals, and it seems like we're seeing the same old Rams without aging Matthew Stafford and, I mean, receiving core that does not look at all enticing.
Yeah, I mean, that Puka Nakua, I mean, he's had those big first couple weeks. But he's going to be a star, and that's kind of obvious at this point. I don't think really the Rams expected much from this offense these first 4 weeks without Kupp. But Kyron Williams looks like he'll be pretty good. And overall, I think once Kupp comes into this offense, defenses are going to have to shift their focus towards him, and Puka Nakua is going to be back to those video game-like numbers. So, I mean, if I'm a Rams fan, it's really no panicking. I'm not sure what the general expectation was for them this year. Kind of a mid-table team here. But, yeah, after that Seahawks game, they've kind of quieted down. But, I mean, they haven't looked terribly bad. That O-line, though, is what really has kept this team from being 2-1 or potentially 3-0.
Yeah, because if you can't get Matthew Stafford time in the pocket, if you can't protect him, you can't open up the rush, then it just, the entire offense kind of just destroys itself. You need a good offensive line. That's what we saw from their Super Bowl winning season. They had an amazing offensive line, and then players retired, players left, and they just have not recovered. And I don't know, it's kind of surprising to me that you made this investment in Stafford and McVay. You gave Aaron Donald this massive contract, and now you kind of just are stuck in limbo because you have not made any sizable improvements to your offensive line. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's disappointing, but at the same time, what can you do if you're a Rams fan? You have no draft picks. You have no real money to move around. That's why you traded Jalen Ramsey. So, yeah, it's a tough situation for sure.
I mean, they got that Super Bowl a couple years back, so I think it was worth it. But, I mean, who knows? They could be one of those 9-8 teams that sneak into the wild card. They don't have a bad team, especially when Kupp comes back. They're a team to look out for.
Yeah, for sure. But moving on to a game that was absolutely, I mean, I feel like this week has just been hitting me with surprises left and right. But when I saw on the bottom of that little ESPN graphic when they showed the other NFL scores, and I saw Miami Dolphins 70 points, Denver Broncos 20, I legitimately thought it was a typo. Like, how do you have 70 points? Like, how? I have no idea, but it happened. It happened. Tua had 4 touchdowns. Devon Achane had 2 touchdowns. Raheem Mostert had 3. Tyreek had 157 yards. And, I mean, the Dolphins just had themselves a day.
Yeah, I think it was a complete lack of effort from the Broncos side right from the get-go. I mean, 10 touchdowns total, but yeah, right from the get-go, the Broncos just didn't have it. And it was Tyreek Hill, Tyreek Hill, Tyreek Hill. And I don't even know what to say. I mean, it just can't stop him. And the worst part about this is that the Dolphins didn't even have Jalen Waddle, like, at all. And they didn't need him. They had a rookie, Devon Achane, run for 220-something yards and 4 touchdowns. And this is a rookie. Complete lack of effort from the Broncos. I mean, it's really a season-altering game, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know how you bounce back from this. You're 0-3. I don't know. Like, you're 0-3, still got to play the Chiefs twice, Chargers twice. I don't even know what to say if you're a Broncos fan. You got the Bills still.
I mean, if you're
I mean, next week you got the Bears, so who knows? That's going to be one of the most boring games. So,
hey, and did you see the Bears are like, I'm pretty sure they're underdogs in that game too. After the Broncos got a 70-piece drop on them, they're still favorites in their next week game, which is kind of crazy. But, yeah, if you're a Broncos fan, you just made this massive investment in Russell Wilson, Sean Payton, and now you kind of have to win. Can you just see some winning happening? And it's not happening. And it's not looking good because you look at this team and you're like, dang, they have everything that you could possibly need. Young running back in Javonte Williams. You have two top receivers in Judy and Sutton. A defense which, I mean, you have Pat Surtain, one of the best cornerbacks in the league. So how are you not winning? How are you getting beat by 50 points? That's the real question.
Effort. It just comes down to effort. This team is not connected. Sean Payton was supposed to come there and change the culture. They had hype coming into this season just like the last, and they couldn't live up to it. I mean, lose at home to the Raiders, then you lose at home to the Commanders, and then this happens. It just might be time to hit that rebuild button. I'm not sure what they can end up getting for Russell Wilson at this point. He hasn't looked completely terrible, but I mean, as a leader, I get he can't control the Dolphins putting up 70, but he can definitely put up more than 20. So I think for me, the Broncos got to hit the reset button. I don't see them coming back from this. It's just you're paying your coach that much money, paying Russ this much money, and that's what you put out on the field. It's just not it's not something you want to see. It really is for me.
It's embarrassing if you're a Denver player, Denver fan. It's kind of
completely embarrassing. And it's at the end of the day, it's a game that really sets the tone for the season. It's sad. Yeah. It's, like you said, embarrassing. Complete lack of effort.
It's kind of hard to recover from a game where you get 70 dropped on you. And moving on, because, you know, we don't like to talk about all that sad stuff that much, but we're going to keep doing that because the Cinderella story of the Colorado Buffaloes moving into college football now is over, officially over. Buffaloes lost 42-6 to the number 10 ranked Oregon Ducks. And I mean, you kind of think that there's going to be a reality check soon. They play the Ducks. They're going to play the USC Trojans next week. And I mean, it seems like this team is coming back to reality.
I didn't get a chance to watch the game, but yeah, from the highlights, it just looked...
Hey, from the score, you can tell.
It's just like this Broncos game, really. I mean, except the offense was even worse for Colorado. I mean, I'm not sure Travis Hunter would have made a 40-point impact. Yeah. But, I mean, I'd hope he'd make that offense look a little bit prettier because Shedeur Sanders had nowhere... I'm not going to say he had nowhere to throw. He had no time to throw.
No time, exactly.
And... Even in that Colorado State game, I just feel like that playbook's so limited. Like, there wasn't much creativity I saw within the offense, and that run game just isn't present. So, overall, I mean, it really is a tough loss, but sorry, they already have triple the amount of wins they had last year. But playing USC doesn't make it much easier right after getting blown out like this.
Exactly. I think it's going to be a tough 2 weeks for this team, but... Hey, it's Coach Prime's first season in the Pac-12, and I kind of have to sympathize because, you know, it's his first season, and they've looked better than they did last year, so that's an improvement. But this Oregon Ducks team is legit. Bo Nix, after, 4 years, looks legit. Mm-hmm. This Ducks defense looks absolutely crazy. They were just getting after Sanders. He had no time, like you said, no time. Just running around, sacked all the time. I feel like every time I switched to that game, it was sack after sack. But, yeah, I feel like this is kind of more what we can expect from the Buffaloes. A team that is not 100% not ready to compete with the top 10, top 15 teams in college football. But eventually, we could see them get there. But not this season, I think. This season, you're seeing them as one of those 20 to top 50 teams in the country.
Yeah, I mean, I other than Deion Sanders, I don't think anyone expected this team to be in the college football playoff talk. Just having a winning season would be a huge improvement, because especially in college football, it's really hard to turn the culture around a team that quickly, from a team that was like 1-11 last year, barely had fans, to packing out the stadium every night and potentially having a winning record. Obviously, that team's not going to be satisfied with that. They want that national championship, but it's just not going to happen this year. But yeah, they're still a great team, definitely top 25 in the country. But it takes time to build a national champion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It takes time, it takes recruiting. And yeah, we'll see what happens, because, I mean, it's Coach Prime. It's obviously something's going to change. And next season we'll see something different. But I think giving it time, understanding that they're not going to be able to compete with teams like Oregon and USC immediately, kind of tempering our hype around this team. But moving on to our last topic of the day.
Before we get back to the podcast, I'd like to give a quick shout out to our sponsors at Anchor and Spotify Podcast. They make it easy for us to upload and share all of our podcasts at all the Spotify networks. To check them out, go to SpotifyPodcasters.com and sign up today.
Where there is actual legitimate hype, and that's the MLB wildcard race. Because for the first time in what I kind of feel like is like 6-7 years, the Houston Astros are in the wildcard race. So I'm actually starting to pay attention to it a little bit more. And it's, I mean, in the American League, it's crazy. You have four teams fighting for the last three spots, I guess you could say. And in the National League, you have, you have three teams fighting for that spot. Cash, it's about to be October. It's about to be that time for baseball.
Yeah, what I'm looking at, just like you, is that AL West wildcard race. Looking at Rangers, mm-hmm. Mariners, Astros. Glad to see Rangers sweeping the Mariners, and the Royals getting the best, sweeping the Astros, which to me was super surprising considering that all those games were in Houston. Now got what, 2.5 game lead on the Astros. So I think the Rangers there could definitely take the division. I mean, their bats are looking a lot better, and more importantly, closers are starting to get more confidence. I'm liking what I'm seeing. Having Aroldis Chapman close it out in the ninth inning, that's looked really strong for us. And right now leading the Angels 4-1, looking to get a win there. And overall, I think this team is ready for the playoffs. I'm not going to expect a whole lot, especially because Scherzer and DeGrom, they're done for the season. So
yeah,
the starting pitching's obviously kind of diminished, but you know, I think this team could definitely sneak in a couple wins here in the divisional series. But on the other side, really been interested looking at this race in the NL East, and that wild card between the Phillies and the Marlins. Marlins look good. They were able to close out homestand with two in a row against the Brewers, and they're just a game back, I believe, of the Cubs, and they go up against the Mets. End the season, I believe, Mets and Pirates. So those are two very beatable teams, and they got to treat it like playoff games, plain and simple. I mean, the pitching hasn't been there for them. Specifically, one man, Sandy Alcantara, who, I mean, had the biggest fall off. Dude was – he was a baller, man, and now he's struggling out here with like a 4.1-something ERA. I don't even know if you put – you got to put him out in one of these last few games, but – this shit hasn't been really pretty from him. So I think if they can win three out of these next four, I think they'll go on to make the playoffs.
Yeah, but I think they're probably, in that National League, in that, I guess, wild card race between them, the Cubs and the Diamondbacks, they're kind of in the best situation, because if you look at the Cubs, they have to play the Braves and the Brewers as their last two series. So two of the best teams in the National League. And then you look at the Diamondbacks, they're going to have to play after this White Sox series, the Houston Astros, who are like them in a super desperate situation. So that's going to be some tight baseball. And if the Marlins schedule is a lot more favorable to that. So I think if they can just go out, do close out business, I think they have a shot at probably that second wildcard spot. But it's going to be interesting to see the Cubs, the Diamondbacks, who can take advantage of their situation, who can, man, squeeze out just one more win, because they're, I mean, as of right now, they have the exact same records. So it's going to be tight.
Yeah, I think, and this is the best part of the year. I mean, this is where, you know, if you're not super into baseball, this is where you tune in. Yeah, exactly. And I think I saw a stat today. Only 7 games this year went over a length of 3.5 hours versus like 129 just 2 years ago.
Yep.
I think that, you know, the game's starting to become more entertaining, more fast-paced, which is what the fans want. And this wild card race is one of the best we've seen in a long, long time. So it's definitely a couple of fun teams to tune in here: Rangers, Marlins, Diamondbacks.
Astros.
I'll say the Astros, even though they just got swept by one of the worst teams in the league.
Even though they just got swept, but it's fine though, because I know they've been playing quite horrendous baseball. But that's all for this weekend warm-up. Thank y'all so much for listening. Make sure to check out all of our social medias at Instagram, Twitter, at rewindthattape.com. And, hey, come back and listen to us again. Wherever you're listening to this podcast, we'll be there next week. We'll be there on Thursday. Friday. And, yeah, thank y'all again so much for watching. See y'all in the meantime. Peace.